Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. From the right of the Christmas tree tonight, we have...
DJ McGuire, a progressive conservative from Suffolk, Virginia.
And from the left side of the Hanukkah bush, we have...
Greg Matuszak, a common sense liberal who would not be and would turn down Trump's chief of staff position. Maybe? From Cincinnati, Ohio.
You could be like the substitute chief of staff, you know, just when the chief of staff is sick, he calls in sick and then you show up. And
I would do that, I guess.
The intern, the understudy, chief of staff. And this is Rebecca Kushmiter, a progressive feminist coming to you from the bottom of a bowl of eggnog. Or Kensington, Maryland. One of those.
Or both. And I'm Kevin Kelton, a passionate moderate from Los Angeles with theater tickets. So we're going to rush this show because I've got theater tickets tonight. And hey, we got an early Christmas present this week when the MPU podcast was ranked the number one political podcast on a website called podranker.com. You can see the entire list on podranker.com/political-podcasts. And it had some impressive names. Greg, who did we beat out?
We beat everybody. We beat NPR. We beat 538. We beat Pod Save America. We beat
Ben Shapiro.
We should beat Ben Shapiro.
You know what? Everyone should beat Ben Shapiro.
Ben Shapiro is a twit.
Yeah.
And that's the nicest vowel I can put in that word to describe Ben Shapiro.
We beat left, right, and center. You know, obviously we know that no one website ranking means that we're better than those shows, but
no.
it was certainly an honor.
For the record, yeah, I'm huge fans of all of them except for Ben Shapiro. I think they're all excellent podcasts.
And listen, he does a professional job too. We just don't like the content, but we think he's
No,
he's
I don't
a
think he
podcaster.
Does a professional job. I think he's a terrible human being.
I was just being nice.
Yeah, I bet he has difficulty tying his shoes. I mean...
Okay, but anyways, we want to thank Laura Baxendale and the rest of the PodRanker crew for listing us first. It's a high honor.
Yes.
We encourage you to go there and check it out, and then maybe even share that link on your Facebook timeline so your friends will find out that we're a cool podcast and give us a listen. And we also want you to check out our website, moreperfectunionpodcast.com, where we often put some kind of commentaries and host bios. Rebecca, anybody write anything recently?
Yeah, last night I posted my thoughts on the latest ruling on Obamacare from that judge out of Texas and the importance of trying to advocate at the state level to put in Obamacare-like protections in your state so that we don't have to worry about activist judges overturning stuff.
Yes, absolutely. And hey, I have an idea. This isn't on our rundown, but I was talking about this issue this morning with Jessica, and one of the things I'm concerned about is obviously healthcare is going to be a big issue in 2020. And we all know that Democrats are kind of conflicted because there's a couple of different avenues to go down. There's clearly Medicare for All, which is single payer, which is what a lot of people consider socialist healthcare.
Sure.
And then there's several other Medicare-style fixes that are called like a Medicare buy-in, or there are Medicaid buy-ins that people have put together. And there are bills, there are several different bills in Congress, both in the House and the Senate, that advocate different kinds of fixes for our clearly broken system. And one of the things that we were talking about is it's almost inevitable that Democrats will start to turn on themselves and have friendly fire over who's got the best fix for the ACA and for potentially a repeal of the ACA if that court ruling stands. And I was just going to suggest that maybe Democrats should run on universal Medicare. That should be the umbrella. Universal
no.
Medicare. Hold on, DJ. Hold on, DJ.
Okay. You finish it. I'll tell you why you're wrong.
You always do, and I count on you, and I love you for it. No. So – that would be like saying, look, we know the ACA needs to be fixed, maybe even ripped apart, and we start fresh with a new system. We can't decide right now whether it's going to be Medicare for All, which would be paid by through taxes, or some sort of Medicare buy-in, which would be paid for with premiums that the individual would pay. But we know that the solution is a public option through Medicare. Universal Medicare is what we Democrats should be about. And then we will figure out the details once we have a Democratic president, a Democratic Senate, and a Democratic House. DJ, why am I wrong?
Well, the first thing is telling people that we have a broad idea of where we want to go and we'll figure out the details later is what the Republicans used from the moment Obamacare was signed into law in 2010. And we all saw what a disaster that was when they actually had to show their homework.
I was going to say that sounded very Republican to me.
Oh, well, if we're going to get insulting.
voters are not going to trust a party that says, here are our general aspirations and we'll work out the details later. If you have a plan, you have to actually present a plan.
So with that, I just went off script, but let's get back to what we wanted to talk about this week, which is the Trump train wreck special, which we're seeing right before our eyes this week. My gosh,
everything that
could go wrong for this man went wrong in 7 days.
Yeah, we see, this is our thing, like, oh boy, this is the worst week he's ever had. And I think we keep saying this, like once a month we say this, like, oh, I don't think he could have a worse week. And every so often he has a great week. I mean, he gets like an extra fry put into his McDonald's or...
He doesn't have toilet paper on his heel when he's boarding Air Force One.
Or he gets a Supreme Court judge confirmed.
Okay, but none of that happened this week.
Not this week. No, this all went down the proverbial shitter for him. And I don't know, where do you want to start?
Well, let's start with his lawyer going to jail and blaming him for it. Like, yeah, I committed these crimes because Donald Trump told me to commit these crimes. Here are the crimes. Here's how Donald Trump told me to commit them. I committed them. I'm going to go to jail. I wish I didn't have to. Maybe make it shorter, Your Honor. And I feel better now that I've confessed all this. That is literally what happened.
Right.
Okay, so here's my question. None of us are lawyers, but if my accountant signs my tax return and it's a false tax return, I'm to blame for it, not my accountant for advising me, right?
Not necessarily. Accountants often do have shared liability.
Okay, shared liability. Why doesn't Trump have shared liability in this situation? Is there any situation where if a lawyer told you something was legal and you direct them to do it and then it turns out to be illegal, that you're off the hook because the lawyer advised you that? Is there any situation of that?
There might be, but this isn't one of them. This is just point blank. This is what I said it was. You know, 3 months ago or 4 months ago now, when Cohen first plea bargained with the Southern District of New York, this was a straw donor scheme. This was Donald Trump making a contribution to his own campaign for an expenditure that he didn't want anyone to know about. So he lied about who actually made the payments, and he continued that lie into his administration. People go to jail for running straw donation schemes. It's what turned Dinesh D'Souza into Dinesh DeFelon, as Doug Matakonis calls him. So as I will say it now, as I have said then, this all by itself is impeachable. Even if Robert Mueller said Trump did nothing wrong on the Russia front, and I don't think he will, this all by itself is impeachable with a capital I.
It's true. I mean, this is illegal. Campaign finance laws exist for a reason. Even if the reasons were flawed, the laws exist. You can't break a stupid law and have the fact that the law is stupid be your defense.
Completely agree. And I actually had discussions with friends and conservative friends and family members whose argument was, but it's campaign finance. This is so minute. Nobody goes to jail for that. You pay a fine. This is such a little thing. And I had to explain to them that no, people go to jail for this sort of stuff all the time. When I ran campaigns, we were like, this is important stuff. We see this every year on local politics and state politics. And like you said, Dinesh D'Souza was definitely an example that just happened a couple of years ago.
I mean, for the most part, if you hear about a campaign finance violation, it's somebody exceeding the max. And it's often unintentional, and the campaign just didn't flag it. And yes, you pay a fine, you sure. do your mea culpas. And that's what campaign finance violations usually are. This is something different. This is a concerted effort to filter money in weird ways to affect the outcome of an election. And it was a significant amount of money, and it was done knowingly.
So if you guys saw Senator Rand Paul about a week or two ago, was talking on the Sunday morning shows, and this was brought up, and he goes, this is nothing, don't worry about it, because the same thing happened to Edwards, where he was paying... I know, you can tell me I'm wrong in just a moment.
There is smoke coming out of DJ's ears, audience. You can probably smell brain cells melting.
He said, Edwards paid off a mistress, just the same thing. And so this will all go away just the same way Edwards got off to blah, blah, blah. DJ, tell us. I know why it's not the same thing, but go ahead. You explain why.
I'm facepalming so hard my head hurts.
I know, but he's a senator. You and I know why it's not the same thing. Go ahead. Explain why.
Because John Edwards used campaign contributions that were documented, that were well known. The question was, did he use it just to buy his mistress's silence, or was he actually putting her to work doing various things, and there were some gray areas and all that?
Various things. Is that what the kids are calling it these days, Teach?
I guess. now I'm going to have a frightening conversation with my 15-year-old when this is done. But the fact of the matter is, John Edwards did not put his own money into this and use a straw donor, which is what Donald Trump did. John Edwards did not make sure that none of this was on any campaign finance documentation anywhere, which is what Donald Trump did. John Edwards did not have a circumstance where there was no campaign effect and did nothing, which is what Donald Trump did. Donald Trump never even thought about buying the silence of either of these women until he became a presidential candidate. It is obvious that this was a campaign expenditure, and it was when he hid from the public through a straw donation scheme. Whatever John Edwards did, John Edwards did not set up a straw donation scheme for any of this. That's why the two situations are very, very different.
And John Edwards was indicted by a grand jury and brought to trial on this. He was found not guilty by a jury because of failure to provide adequate evidence, but there was evidence a crime was committed even if he wasn't convicted for it.
Right, whereas they're trying to argue now that the president should not be indicted for it. Well, if John Edwards was indicted for it, the president should be indicted for it. The president's is worse. And the other thing I want to add about John Edwards that people keep forgetting, Riley Hunter actually did work for the campaign for the money that she received. Now, it was still bogus, but she actually produced a video. She actually was on the campaign trail, carried a camera, did work, produced a product. Whereas these women, you know, we could make jokes about what they produced, but it certainly wasn't.
We could, but we're better than that. We're not going to.
But we can just make the temporal argument here that his interactions with those women, whatever those interactions were, and I have no reason to doubt their accounts, happened years before he was running for president. So he doesn't even have the excuse of, oh, I just didn't want Melania to find out. Well, if you hadn't wanted Melania to find out, you should have paid them off a decade ago.
And for all we know, the FSB does have a video somewhere.
I don't think they need one. I mean, that's the thing about all of this that's so almost disappointing. Ms. Daniels and Ms. McDougal are the most salacious part of this, and that's not even really that interesting that he had affairs with two women outside of his marriage. There's no pee tape, there's nothing. He just wanted to build a tacky hotel, and Putin knew. And it became a whole bunch of, like, don't tell anybody secrets. That's what all this is. That's what FSB has on him, that he wanted to build an ugly hotel in Moscow.
Well, I think you're being kind. I think they have more, but we can speculate about this all we want. Robert Mueller is going to release a report. Hopefully it will be made public, and we'll find out what he has. And then the Congress will decide what to do about it.
So you're not expecting, you know, massive redactions like in every document we've seen in the past week where, like, we all tune into Maddow at 9 o'clock. You're like, yes, this is going to be so good. And she basically shows us a black screen where the word "thaw" is uncovered in a document.
Well, listen, as I've said on this program before, whoever is the Attorney General at that time, whether it's Matt Whitaker, the acting Attorney General, or whether it's William Barr once he's confirmed, whatever happens to that report, just remember, that you cannot redact Robert Mueller. Robert Mueller knows what he knows, and he will be called to testify in front of congressional committees. Robert Mueller is going to tell the world what he knows, whether it's on paper or whether it's in front of a congressional investigative committee.
Well, he knows what he knows, and the White House knows what he knows.
Yes, yes.
That, you know, the White House knows exactly what's behind those black bars, and that is why they are so frantic right now.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure all of the White House knows. I think certain people very, very close to Trump know. He knows, of course, and maybe Jared and Ivanka know. I'm not sure if anybody else really knows how deep this cesspool actually goes.
Okay. Now, let me ask you guys, did you see the latest Saturday Night Live, the Christmas episode, where they opened with a This Is a Wonderful Life or It's a Wonderful Life parody with Trump having never been president? Did you see the episode?
Yes. So good.
Yeah. And now there's some type of controversy where the Trump administration wants to sue NBC or something?
Yeah. Trump tweeted this morning. Otherwise, I would not have paid attention to SNL. Nothing against SNL. It's just not something that I watch anymore. Sunday morning, he goes out and talks about how and tweets about how terrible SNL is, how it's all fake, it's all BS. And then just in the tweet, talks about taking Saturday Night Live to the courts. I called it authoritarianism in five words. He is so upset about how SNL treats him that he thinks that he can take them to court and get them to stop. Or at least that's what he wants to do or something. I don't know.
But it's supposedly he wants the FCC to look into whether they really are an arm of the Democratic Party and whether it violates FCC ruling. Because they've had they've been so liberal and so that it's now campaign talk and it's now political speech and it's no longer comedy.
Well, but you know, it is comedy. If we're talking about copyright and news media coverage and intellectual property, you know, and fair use issues, parody is always a protected form. So Saturday Night Live has every right to be doing things like this.
First of all, if he were to pursue this, much like his impression on SNL, Trump would literally be laughed out of court. That's number one. He has no case.
Yeah, there are no grounds.
But beyond that, I have a theory that I actually think that Trump doesn't get something that I get, and I think that the rest of the country is going to start to get. The Trump impression on SNL isn't hurting him anymore. It's helping him. Alec Baldwin, I hope you're listening to me. We're at a place where you're making him lovable. Nobody watches that anymore and says, oh, geez, I can't believe I voted for this guy. I'm never going to do that again. People watch it now and find him oddly endearing.
I disagree.
I'm telling you guys, there is a point at which an SNL character, going back to Chevy Ford, going back to the first George Bush, going back to Will Ferrell's George W. Bush, going back to Gore, there is a point where the impression becomes endearing.
Well, part of the impression becoming endearing requires the person being impersonated to embrace it. And the fact that this still rubs Trump the wrong way is what makes it abrasive. You know, I remember George W. Bush actually, you know, making jokes about Dana Carvey. I remember Sarah Palin trying to be a good sport and go on the show with Tina Fey. Trump is the only president who is really angry about the way he's portrayed on Saturday Night Live. And his umbrage is what kind of makes that still an effective tool against him.
In terms of Gerald Ford, in terms of George H.W. Bush, even in terms of George W. Bush, SNL's take on them was that these are, you know, they're fundamentally decent people who just make various trip-ups and syntactical issues along the way. Gerald Ford was portrayed as someone who was just simply out of his depth. George H.W. Bush was portrayed as just a syntactical disaster. George W. Bush was portrayed again also as someone who was just out of his depth and faked it a little better than Ford did. But even SNL recognized that they were all, you know, at their hearts, they were just fundamentally decent people. There is no such assumption with Donald Trump because Donald Trump has done nothing to make anyone assume that he is a decent person. And so I think that's really where the difference is. Now, among the folks who voted for Donald Trump, what Donald Trump does in response probably jazzes them up, because a whole lot of them are themselves not so decent as human beings.
Well, and how many of them are actually watching Saturday Night Live or merely tuning in for Trump's anger about it?
That could be it, too.
I mean, right. They've probably already declared NBC persona non grata. Plus, they've already probably cut cable and are watching everything on Hulu 3 days later.
Or just watching InfoWars.
Also free. Yes. So. Oh, my God. This week, my son, my 10-year-old, says to me, "Hey, Mom, what happened to that crazy Republican?" I'm like, "Kid, you're going to have to be more specific." And he was talking about some Alex Jones theory. I'm like, "Oh, yeah, no, he's still around."
The More Perfect Union, real debate without the hate, brought to you by the good people at Pillsbury.
No, we're not.
Those bastards.
The other story in the news this week, after being threatened for a while, John Kelly is finally leaving the White House. And my gosh, who would have seen that coming? I would have bet that he would have been there until 2024.
Yeah.
Because he was an adult. He was
adult in the room. You went wrong by 6 years. We know that now.
Yeah. Everyone assumed Kelly was going to be the adult in the room, and it turned out, no, he just liked having a better seat at which to deport people.
Yeah.
Like, he had a better view of all the deportations going on from the White House.
So is this guy Mick Mulvaney, is he going to take the job permanently, or is he just there until Trump can find somebody else?
It is really unclear. Like, he's not actually resigning from OMB, is he?
Right.
He's been at CFPB. He's like,
right.
Because what is going to happen is by the Republican National Convention in 2020, Mick Mulvaney, who will still be Director of the Office of Management and Budget, but who will also be Acting Chief of Staff, Acting Secretary of Homeland Security, Acting Attorney General, and Acting Secretary of Defense, will also replace Pence and be the nominee for Vice President.
He might also replace Melania at this point. He'd
be Acting First Lady.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Considering that Trump no longer considers sexual relations as something important in his marriage, then yeah, maybe Mulvaney can do that too.
Okay, so right now we have a government, but we may only have an acting government as of Saturday, because I believe the government's going to shut down. You know what? I think we're in for more than a few days of shutdown. What do you guys think?
I agree.
I asked my husband, because he's smarter than I am on this stuff.
And Remind everybody what Scott does again.
My husband is a lobbyist and a former Hill staffer. He's seen more than one of these battles go through. And I said, you know, do you think Trump's going to cave on this? Because I don't think Democrats have any reason to budge on the wall funding issue. He says, I think shutdown. But he doesn't think it's going to last more than a week. He thinks it'll break sometime between Christmas and New Year's, which will annoy Congress a lot, that they'll have to come back and deal with this. Usually they're on break.
To the fact that the Department of Defense is not a part of this because their appropriations was enacted
a few
months ago, it means two things. One, I can rest easy because I'm a defense contractor. And two,
and it's all about you, Deej.
Of course. And two, there will be far less pressure on either side to actually buckle under, because they know at least the troops are still getting paid. So it would not surprise me at all if the shutdown actually goes through until the new year and into the new Congress.
I agree. And I'm going to make another prediction that you guys can yell at me about, but I think Trump is going to win. I think he's going to get somewhere between $2.5 billion and $4 billion for the wall. I think Schumer's going to cave, and I think it's going to be one of the bigger political mistakes that the Democrats can make, but I think they're going to make it, because you know what? He's insane. I'm not playing this game anymore where I'm rationalizing. I think Trump is a megalomaniac, narcissist, and he's got some other psychological issues that I'm not capable of diagnosing, but they're there. And he's looking at 2 years of investigations, of stalemate in Congress, of presidential candidates going back and forth, 20 of them going across country talking about what a terrible person he is. And he needs one more win that he can bring to his base. And that win is going to be starting the wall. And I think he is going to hold out, and he'll hold out. I think he'll hold out for a year, frankly.
You know,
I don't think he cares.
The thing is, if he holds out past January 3rd, there is no chance of it. Nancy Pelosi is not going to let it happen. There aren't the votes in the House past January 3rd.
And frankly, there aren't votes in the House right now to get it through, or it would have gotten through by now.
No, well, it would have gotten through the House, but...
Yeah.
There is no way with him on video, and there's video with Mike Pence sitting there stone-faced or stoned, we can't tell, with him saying, I'll take credit for this one. This one's on me, especially with the Democrats offering $1.3 billion for increased border security, so they're already meeting him halfway, and with them throughout the whole thing saying, wait, isn't Mexico supposed to pay for this? Where's that promise? And he goes, Mexico will pay for it through
tariffs. No, he's already said Mexico has paid for it. He says the new NAFTA means Mexico has paid for the wall.
No.
No, he has said that.
No, he has. That's what he said.
He has said it. Now I have a fucking facepalm migraine. Because that's utterly fucking ridiculous.
That's ridiculous.
But you know what? Ridiculous doesn't count anymore, DJ. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying ridiculous is no longer a disqualifier.
No, ridiculous was never a disqualifier.
Yeah, we're talking about Washington. Ridiculous is pretty much de rigueur.
Exactly. But the fact of the matter is, again, there are not the votes in the House to get money for the wall right now with 240-odd Republicans or 230-odd Republicans in the House. Yeah. When there will be less than 200 Republicans in the House, it's going to be even less likely that wall funding is going to get through the House.
Okay. I'm just telling you, you know what? I hope you're right. I hope I'm wrong. I'm just telling you guys, something in my bones tells me that this is going to drag into February and that the Democrats are going to break. And they're going to go, well, we only gave him, he had 1.3. We gave him another 1 billion or 1.5 billion. It's no big deal. And he is going to use it to bludgeon the Democrats for the next 2 years.
But
that's
Nancy Pelosi does not give any fucks. Not a one.
I think when you're looking at the third month of this, I think that that's going to be a different situation.
No, normally presidents win shutdowns, but normally presidents, when shutdowns happen, it's normally because Congress wants something that the president is not willing to give them. In this case, the president wants something that Congress is not willing to give them. So when congressional folks go home to their constituents, they can say, look, this idiot just wants a wall. There's nothing I can do about that. I can't fight that. The only folks who might be in trouble over that are the representatives of Huntsville, Alabama, and of the D.C. suburbs. But the folks in the D.C. suburbs know damn well that Donald Trump said, hey, I'll take the blame for this. I'll take credit for this. So they already know who to blame, and it's not going to be their Democratic representative in Congress. It's going to be Donald Trump. The fact of the matter is Donald Trump has set it up so that everybody else is absolved of all blame for this, and he will just take it all upon himself. Okay, fine.
Guys, I'm sorry. You're missing the forest from the trees. He's playing to a very small segment of the country. He's playing to his base. His base will think it's a good thing that he shut down the government for the wall.
But you are missing our point, that outside of the base, no one will blame a single Democrat for the shutdown. And outside of Donald Trump's base...
Then how's it going to end? You tell me how it's going to end. Because Donald Trump is sitting in the White House, and here's the two stories that are going to be happening come January, I'm going to say 15th or February 1st. There's going to be two stories. One is that the Congress is investigating everything that's come out between now and then about the Russia investigation, including the possibility of a Mueller report. That's one thing that's going to be in the news.
Subpoenas
the other thing that's going to be in the news is Donald Trump is still holding out for the wall. Why do you think he's going to crack on that? That's what he wants in the news. Here's that choice. High crimes and misdemeanors, Mueller report, impeachment talk, or I'm protecting Americans from dirty, rotten Mexicans by building them a wall. I'll take what's behind door number two, please. So immigration, I mean, what we're really talking about here, whether it's the wall, whether it's Donald Trump, we're talking about real people who are really suffering, and they're in the middle of this whole push and pull, including the story about that 7-year-old girl who died in the custody of Border Patrol. Guys, what's your take on this story? I was heartbroken when I heard about it. What's your take?
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. It's heartbreaking.
It's a tragedy, and if we are not seriously having an internal look at these groups that are and how we are treating these people who have traveled great distances, and how we are treating immigrants, illegal or legal, that we let a 7-year-old child die, it's ridiculous, you know. And both sides should agree on that, whether she was illegal or legal. We shouldn't let children die in our custody.
Well, what makes this even worse is the Department of Homeland Security putting out basically saying, well, this is why people should make the caravan in the first place. As if to say, we care so little about these people that, you know, making a desperate journey to come into our country, who are escaping tyrannical regimes, in some cases escaping regimes that are communist in all but name. We care so little about them that if they die on the way, it's their fault. It's just sickening. It's sickening, and it's utterly ridiculous. And frankly, not to sort of go back to the last conversation, but this is where it's going to be a situation where either Trump will cave or the Republicans in Congress will cave despite him, is when they keep hearing from people saying, oh, look, are you really keeping the government shut down because Donald Trump wants to kill 7-year-old children? They're going to run for the hills. They're all going to run for the hills. And someone will tell Donald Trump, look, this is a battle you have to fight another day. Whether he listens or not, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, this is not something that is politically sustainable. Because as much as Donald Trump loves his base, and as much as Donald Trump's base is, as much as there are some very cruel people in his base, not all of the 63 million people who voted for him voted for 7-year-olds to die in the custody of the Border Patrol. And it will be those moderate Republicans, whatever few are left, essentially saying, look, y'all better figure out a way to get around this or we're out. That's going to end up, you know, that is not something that is sustainable for a whole bunch of Republicans outside of the Wonder Bread white Midwest.
And with that, we want to thank everybody for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at #NPUpodcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And don't forget to share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. And if you like talking politics and want to debate with us between shows, please join us in our Facebook group, Open Fire Politics. We're all there, and we'd love to see you there, too. If we don't do another podcast before the new year, have a great Christmas and Happy New Year. But if we do another podcast, well, we'll see you then. Thanks for listening.